Hey, Roxy.
Hey, James.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know why?
Why?
Because Creepy Kingdom has officially launched a Patreon account.
Patreon? What's Patreon?
Well, let me tell you, Patreon is a way that the listeners of the show can support us.
So, like a Kickstarter?
Not exactly. Kickstarter only is a one-time thing. On Patreon, our listeners can support us every month. And in exchange for them supporting us, we will give them special, super awesome prizes.
How much do they have to pay to support us?
They can pay whatever they want. You could pay $1 a month. You could pay $10, $100. It's up to them.
That's really cool. So how can Creepy Kingdom fans find this Patreon thing?
Well, you could go to creepykingdom.com and check the show notes on our recent episodes, or you could go to patreon.com/creepykingdom. That's patreon.com.
I'm going to go check it out right now.
Me too.
Monster Movie Media presents...
Greetings and welcome to episode 92 of the Creepy Kingdom Podcast, a podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. Coming up in this episode, we take a look at the dark origins of the Little Mermaid. But before we get to that, just want to make a little comment about our last episode, which was an April Fool's episode. A lot of people had some pretty extreme reactions to that, which was a podcast that we had changed to be, instead of Creepy Kingdom, it was Air Bud Kingdom. And it was all about Air Bud. And there's a lot of Air Bud fans out there. And a lot of people that aren't. Got a few requests to do a second episode of Air Bud Kingdom, so... You know, you never know if we'll do that again. But lo and behold, we're back to being Creepy Kingdom. Let's get on with the show. Ahoy there, mateys. We're going to get into some great Little Mermaid fun here. But before we do, let me introduce who's joining me on this fine Little Mermaid episode. The Evil Queen of Creepy Kingdom, Miss Roxy Tart.
Hi! That's so evil.
And the Countess.
My bad. Hello.
That's better.
Okay.
And the Countess of Creepy Kingdom, Miss Cupcake Terror.
Okay, I'm good. Hey, guys.
Keep singing.
I want to turn that song into, like, a hardcore, like, metal song. I'm
sure it's out there.
It is. I can find it for you. No problem.
Oh, I want to find it.
Well, unfortunately, that's not what this episode's about. We're not just talking about Little Mermaid. We actually are going to be taking a look at the dark origins of the Little Mermaid and see, what's different from the original source material by Hans Christian Andersen.
Din Lil Hafru.
Yeah, Din Lil Hafru.
Oh my God. Something like that.
Yep. So yeah, we're gonna do this. This was actually a request after we did the Snow White one. You know, so I assume you two are familiar with the Disney film Little Mermaid?
Oh, dear gods, yes. Just a little. If my sister ever hears this, she will probably be like, oh, my God, I can't believe you told people. But, yeah, we were actually...
Tell people what?
That my sister was obsessed with The Little Mermaid.
I'm just saying, you said that to us, but you didn't say it on the show. Yeah, so there's something about what you're talking about.
Yeah, let me say it on the show. So my little sister, she is 7 years younger than me. And when Little Mermaid came out, I can't remember how old she was, but she fell in love madly, instantly. Took her to see it in the theater, the whole thing. So as soon as it came out on VHS, she would watch it every day. I think for like a year. And she wore out the VHS. I think we still have it, but it won't play on anything. It's just dead. And she used to have a Little Mermaid bathing suit that she would wear all the time. She was just a Little Mermaid. And her voice was beautiful. She had a beautiful falsetto voice. And she would sing constantly. So it was she wanted to be the Little Mermaid. So adorable.
It's really, you know, you bring that up, but that's kind of, you know, that's the generation. I mean, this is that generation's film. You know, I think most Disney fans have some sort of connection to The Little Mermaid, especially adult Disney fans of right now, because
The Little Mermaid is what ushered in the Disney Renaissance. That's very true, yeah.
It is. I mean,
it made musical a undirty word.
It could, if Little Mermaid wasn't made, it could be a very different Disney company right now.
Right? Let's not talk about that. I'm so glad that it was made.
I don't know. They're making some pretty sweet, dark, unmarketable movies right before that.
Yeah, unmarketable.
So, I mean, you know, the movies are, I enjoyed them, but, you know, they weren't really marketable, so.
Yes, I'm familiar with The Little Mermaid. I didn't have a little sister who was obsessed with it, but I might have seen it a couple times. It's possible that I could go grab my Platinum Edition DVD at the moment if we wanted to for 2006, or I could walk in the next room and pull out that VHS. It still plays. It's not a problem. I literally could reach it from here probably. But yeah, I've seen it a couple times. Cool. Yeah, you haven't seen it at all.
Cool. What's the point I'm making? Everyone is really familiar with The Little Mermaid. Except for me, I guess. I've seen it many times, but I actually rewatched it again today just to refresh memory, because probably last time I watched it was 2 years ago. So.
Yeah, I think it's really cute when earlier when we were talking about doing this podcast, James is like, so yeah, you guys rewatch The Little Mermaid if you can. And we were like, no, we're good. I mean, as much as I love the movie, I really don't want to watch it again.
I watch it all the time. Let's just be honest. Like, it's constantly on. There's always a Disney movie playing in this house. So.
Which isn't a terrible thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably have seen it less than 10 times. So that's right. So that's my perspective.
I have probably watched it in the last 10 days.
Wow.
Not like actually sat down and watched it, but, you know, it was on in the background in some room of this house.
Gotcha. I just picture just a room with just random Disney movies in every room playing on a loop.
Yeah, there's a different Disney movie in every room. How do you think I know so much? I have a constant like loop, so that it's just ingrained in me.
It's either really cool or really creepy.
A little of both. So we're gonna kind of dive into some of the differences between the Disney version.
Virgin.
Sorry, it's a slip there.
Hey, technically in both versions, they were virgins. Yeah, so we're good. Good.
So that's something. But I came across this website that is pretty cool and with a really sassy name. So when you say it, you got to like kind of move your head around and, you know, put your hand on your hip.
Disney Spied or Disney Tried?
You know, I mean, and basically the person that runs this site really got down to it. You know, there's probably about 30 or 40 different movies that they did. So, you know, shout out to them. And of course, we're going to link to this article so you can check it out yourself.
The Little Mermaid is based on the Hans Christian Andersen tale of a mermaid who falls in love with a prince and becomes human. It marked the beginning of the Disney Renaissance in the late 1980s. With the studio returning to what they did best, animated retellings of classic stories. Since you'd have a job finding a copy of the original that was more than 5 words on each page with no pop-up pictures, you'd think it would be a happy and magical affair and perfectly suited to Disney's lineup, right?
Yeah.
Wrong. Andersen's tale is tragic and dark indeed, and would traumatize many a little girl obsessed with fairy tale weddings and happy endings. So, did they jump in the deep end or stay close to shore for this one? Not to spoil the surprise, but they kept as far away from the water as the cat that got rabies, drowned, and then came back as the Wicked Witch of the West. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Disney glossing at its finest, so we won't need to plumb the depths to find many differences here.
All right.
That is, I think, one of the best descriptors ever.
All right, let's start with our little breakdown here. Let's start with the main characters.
In the Disney version, the main characters, which basically we all know, so I'm just going to run through it real quick, are Ariel, the youngest of King Triton's daughters.
Right.
King Triton, the ruler of the merfolk and proud father. Ursula, the sea witch.
Hooray!
Eric, the prince that Ariel falls in love with, who, of course, has an adorable dog. And Sebastian the crab, the, like, stuffy court composer.
Delicious crab. Dinner.
Right? Nom, 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 nom.
No, he never got caught.
So those are the characters from the Disney version. If you're listening to the show, you probably know who they are.
Maybe.
I'm just going out on a limb saying that even if you haven't seen the movie in a long time, you know the characters of Little Mermaid. Okay, then we have the Andersen version.
All right, so here's the Andersen version. The first thing you notice about the original is that none of the characters have names, even the titular mermaid. She's only 10 years old when the story begins, and although she's just as interested in the human world as Ariel, she is shy, quiet, and introspective, and doesn't break the rules of the ocean to feed her curiosity. Instead, she contents herself with gawping out the merplace windows, symbolically reaching up whenever a ship passes overhead, and badgering her grandmother for tales of the human world.
So, no Ariel, huh? And not a redhead.
And also 10 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people thought Ariel was young at 16.
Right, yeah. No.
I do like that they changed her attitude and whatnot to make her like a kind of stronger, more defiant, you know, because if you go back and you look at Snow White and Cinderella and stuff like that, a lot of the stuff that people dislike about those stories is how timid the main characters were. And with the Disney Renaissance, we got these, you know, strong, outspoken girls. So that was good that they changed that.
Definitely.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of, you know, girls that watch this young, really, or even not young, but like preteen age, particularly, really like latched on to Ariel's rebellious nature.
Yeah, so that's
definitely.
That's a very important characteristic of Ariel in her legacy. In the book, the Mer King is completely shafted in favor of his mother, who tidies up the palace and regales her granddaughters with tales of the world above the ocean. The other sisters also help the title mermaid, that's the color, with advice and offer comfort rather than existing only to show she is the youngest. Yeah, the sisters really are really one-dimensional in the Disney version.
Yeah, they're just there for that one music number.
Yeah, they get a little more screen time in Ariel's beginning, but for the first one, no. I love how the obviously Mer Queen here, the grandmother, tidies up the palace and tells stories. Why is the Mer Queen
the maid?
Yeah.
Well, when did Hans Christian Andersen write this? Let's think about that.
You know what? What if she's not This doesn't say anything about the mermaid being a princess.
No, I don't think she is a princess.
So if the grandmother tidies up the palace and tells stories, then that would make the grandmother like the housekeeper.
So already our princess has lost her royal lineage.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that King Triton, just correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't like that part of Greek mythology?
Yes.
Yes.
So, but in the original version, he didn't have a name. So that whole element of it was completely brought into it by Disney, which is really
in the original version, he's not there. Hans Christian Andersen didn't have a.
Oh, right, right. He's
not even emerging. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And Disney had to stick with the concept of the Disney princesses, everything that they've done in the past. So she had to be from somewhere.
Yep.
Yeah. Continuing the ever absent mother.
Seriously, what is up with these? I mean, well, really parents. I think that Ariel is like one of the first where her parents were. Well, no, I take it back because her mother was dead. I have a conspiracy theory.
It's time for a cupcake conspiracy corner.
So, when I used to watch it all the time, I used to think that Ursula was her mom and was jilted by King Triton because he was a fickle god and decided to leave and try to take over the ocean. And that was Ursula's driving force.
It's not too far-fetched because
no.
There's really no explanation why Ursula wants to go.
My least favorite thing about the movie is that we have no idea why Ursula is so pissed off at Triton.
Yeah.
So my theory fits really well.
Yeah, it does. I mean, they obviously they had. I don't know if Ursula is Ariel's mother, but I feel like that they had some kind of relationship in the past, right?
Yep.
Maybe. Well, because in Ariel's beginning, we meet Ariel's mom. She's a mermaid.
Oh, like, dang it, really?
Yeah, But what if Triton cheated on Ariel's mom with Ursula? What if Ursula was his mistress and he refused to leave Ariel's mom for her and she got all pissed off and was banished and then Ariel's mom dies and blah, 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 blah.
I like that. I'm down. I like that story.
Let's run with it. There's something going on there. Was Ariel's beginning the third?
Yes.
Movie.
Are we not talking about the second one? I haven't seen the second or the original.
I feel like I've watched them all.
And, the second one was Return to the Sea, and that's where a Melody comes in, and that's Ariel's daughter.
Right?
Eric's daughter. Yeah. And then the third one is Ariel's beginning, and it's the prequel.
All right, yeah. I have almost no memory of those two films. I know I watched them once. But...
Or twice.
And the bad guy in Ariel's beginning is Marina Del Rey. She's pretty awesome.
Marina Del Rey.
She's kind of like similar to Ursula, right?
Kind of.
Is that the one where she's skinny?
Yeah.
Like, it's like a skinny Ursula or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's not Ursula.
Okay.
And she's like super fashion obsessed and stuff, and I liked her.
Because you are her.
I know.
Well, you know, on Creepy Kingdom, we don't consider the straight-to-DVD films canon.
Nope.
So we will not incorporate them into our...
Roxy's over here like, oh, how could you?
How dare you? How dare you not canon the existence of Ariel's mom and Melody?
I'm sorry, and there was a Little Mermaid like Saturday morning cartoon as well, which is also part of canon. Yeah, it was only like one season.
Was it on the Disney Channel? I take it.
It might have been on the Disney Channel.
Disney Morning then,
but it was on like CBS or something like that.
Crazy.
Yeah. So you know.
Well, I refuse to follow that rule. I refuse to believe that Melody isn't canon. So there.
All right. The only
that, James.
I'll be fair. I haven't watched many of these movies directed.
Well, Well, you've only seen, you know, Little Mermaid like 10 times, so. Right. We can't expect you to see everything else too.
As the resident Little Mermaid expert of our group here.
Yes.
And I know Katie might have seen it more than me, but I've seen all the movies, so there. I'm just gonna throw out that Melody is totally canon.
All right. Anyway, I think we're deviating really far from the dark origins of Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
Let's get back on track.
So another difference is that the Sea Witch has no particular motivation in the original. She's creepy, immoral, and lives in a sinister and possibly undead part of the ocean, but has no plans to take over the kingdom. She just has a knack for making powerful potions in exchange for non-vital body parts.
Well, she doesn't have a motivation in Disney version either. We just rambled on about that.
Well, it's not explained, but there obviously is motivation.
They give her a motivation. They just don't explain why she has that motivation.
I like this. I like the Anderson version. She's just an evil, evil person and wants to have body parts. Because she doesn't want body parts.
This doesn't say that she's evil. This says she's creepy.
Okay, dude, if you want body parts, that's evil.
Yeah, but they're non-vital body parts.
Coming from like a Resident Evil queen.
I'm just saying, I as someone who may or may not have a collection in their closet of other people's non-vital body parts.
Oh, that's right.
Just because you collect non-vital body parts doesn't make you evil. It just makes you a little creepy. I actually have quite a lot in common with the Sea Witch and Hans Christian Andersen.
You really do.
Yeah, you possibly live in an undead part of the ocean as well. All right, moving on.
I still have so much more to say to that, but it has no relevance to the issue at hand.
Well, let's try to keep on course for our dear listeners. Finally, we have the prince, who is only about 16 years old in this version.
Whoa.
He is also handsome and lovelorn, but instead of having a playful dog at his side, he enjoys the company of a group of female slaves and generally comes across as a condescending, insensitive especially towards the mermaid.
Wow.
Instead of having a dog.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I don't think that would have gone over so well in the Disney version.
Well, hey, I'd have to say, if Gaston can have his, like, three Bibettes, why couldn't, you know, Prince Eric have his three Bibette versions?
I think
that replacing the female slaves with Max was a good change,
yeah, probably.
I just love the role that Max played and just picture of, like, well, you know, it's either this playful, silly dog or a group of female slaves that are just as wacky and rambunctious as Max was.
Oh my goodness.
Like,
good job, Disney.
Yeah, that was a good one. That's really amusing to me.
Disney's version.
Christian Andersen, my God.
Right. Disney's version is focused on a forbidden teenage romance and a daughter disobeying her strict father. And Anderson's story is about a naive and innocent young girl who falls in love with a jerk who doesn't appreciate her, which ultimately spells her doom.
So
Hans Christian Andersen is a little bit more like real life.
Yeah, I feel like that's a kid story. Essentially, that's kind of that's what like Frozen is, right? Like,
yeah, kind of. Yeah, kind of.
So they eventually went that route.
Naive girl falls in love with jerk.
Yep.
Like, yeah, it pretty much sums it up. Jerky prince.
All right.
That's super, like, okay. That's just weird.
What?
The whole slave thing. I can't move on from that one. I mean, I know I should, but I can't move on from that. Like, that's just, anyhow.
You're like, but female slaves, I love her.
Yeah. You just love her.
This is family show. Never mind. I mean,
okay, so he had... Okay, and yes, the writer of this particular thing that we are reading says that it was a group of female slaves, right? Mm-hmm. But it very easily could have been a group of concubines or wives or, you know, I mean, you gotta look at the time period and like the part of the world and stuff like that. But like, he could have easily looked at the mermaid and been like, yeah, you can join my harem. That's cool.
Right. He was a jerk, right? So why not?
Yeah. Like,
all right, so there's our little bit different characters there, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's weird because it says Disney version is focused on forbidden teenage romance and disobeying a father, and if you really think about what happens in the Disney version, it's like it's kind of dumb. You know, like,
well, all teenage romance is dumb,
I guess, but yeah, well, that's, you know, that's the devil's advocate of what I'm saying.
Right.
But you know, like as a plot structure of a movie, you know, it's just kind of like, oh, I saw this dude. Oh my God. I love him. I'm going to stop being this amazing mythical creature.
And a princess.
And become a boring old human, and I'm willing to lose my voice and everything that makes me unique, my voice, my fins, you know, and you know, so I'm not trying to go that route here, but I'm saying like,
but pretty much you're going that route.
No.
Go ahead.
No, I'm going to say there was this series of like comics or something that I saw like in the past year or something that someone wrote that was, if Disney princesses had mothers,
how different they would be.
Yeah. How different the story would be.
Oh my goodness. I'm pretty sure a lot of things would have changed if their mothers had been around.
And the one for Little Mermaid was like, you know, the mother talking to Triton saying like, it's like, dude, relax. It's just a dumb teenage crush. She'll be over in a few days.
Yep. Sounds about right.
Yep.
The sense. You couldn't have the rational person in the movie. Yeah. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a good Disney romance.
Right.
Because there's no rationality when it comes to Disney and love.
But,
hey,
I was going to say, but that simple story really resonated with young kids that,
yes,
you know, and that's the success to it, you know, like, so I mean, it was probably a good decision to go that route, but you know, eventually they did Disney as a company eventually did go that route with kind of doing that in Frozen with the falling in love with a jerk who,
it just took them 20 years.
Yeah,
falling in love with a jerk in 5 minutes. No, not even 5 minutes, 2 minutes.
You can't marry a man you just met. Okay.
All right. Thanks for my fun.
Elsa had good advice. All right. Can't marry a man you just met.
Right on.
So, Katie, do you want to? I guess for anyone that doesn't know, we should sum up the story of Disney's Little Mermaid. Like.
Is that what this next thing is? The summary of the story?
Yeah, the part of your world.
I feel like we could sum it up even shorter than with all this.
I can sum it up.
Katie, do you want to sum up the story of the Little Mermaid Disney version?
Yep. Up where they walk, up where they run, up where they stay all day in the sun.
Wandering free.
Wish they could be.
Of that world. There you go. That's the movie.
All right. So that's just like a Disney movie. We just randomly burst into song here on Creepy Game. Sure.
You guys saw that dance moves and everything.
So anyway, we're moving on from the characters. We're going to talk about the main difference between the entire story. So Cupcake, summarize Little Mermaid to someone that may not have seen it or don't really remember all the fine details.
Basically, The Little Mermaid is about a little girl who wants to go up and be a part of that world, right? She needs to figure out how to make it happen. Oh, land, earth. not in the sea.
terrible.
I always bust your chops. No, I'm saying who do I know, but who? Obviously, people know what I'm talking about, but I never let you get away with anything. I'm always. Right, just go on. You were on a roll. I messed you up. Sorry.
No. See, now I'm totally like the train is derailed, James. Okay. Damn. So the Disney version of The Little Mermaid is about a 16-year-old mermaid who falls in love with the human world, including a human guy, and decides, even though her father doesn't want her to, she's going to go and she's going to get her dude. So she goes to the Sea Witch, she trades her voice for a pair of legs, and makes a deal that she's got to kiss Eric within 3 days. And she gets to remain human, or if not, then she turns back into a mermaid and the Sea Witch keeps her voice. And of course, when the Sea Witch sees that Ariel's gonna like do the thing, then she's like, oh, hell no, and brings in the best Disney villain, Vanessa, just saying. Anyways, it all turns out great. Yay. Happy ending for everyone. Ariel and Eric get married.
All right, side note, dude, Eric, that was kind of like, Eric's kind of dumb, right? Is that
Eric's shady?
I mean, like, yeah, you know what I mean? Shady. Like, oh, like Vanessa comes rolling through after she spends all this time with Ariel. You know, it was just like, oh well. I mean, that's that voice I liked a few days ago. So let's get married immediately.
Yeah, but he was under her spell. So let's talk about that. There was a spell that Ursula, as Vanessa, puts on Eric. So it's not wholly his fault.
All right.
Well, so and he's still a young prince.
And he does believe that the girl who that voice belonged to saved his life.
Yes.
So he does believe that he owes her.
So he's doing a noble thing. He's doing a noble thing.
You know, yeah. And then she puts a spell, and that's how Vanessa, you know, obviously got into the castle in the first place. And then she puts a spell on Eric, and he's like, we're getting married tomorrow. We sail at sunset.
And then...
I get that you're a prince, but who has the ability to sail at sunset? I mean, did he have that wedding barge waiting? That's creepy.
So it was his boat, dude.
It was a wedding barge.
It was anyhow, wedding I'm barge. Just, it yeah, was Eric's boat. He got married on his own boat. All right. Let's talk about this Anderson version. Going up to the surface is like a rite of passage for a 15-year-old mermaid. And all of the Merking's daughters are keenly looking forward to that moment. In the meantime, they've collected wares and spoils from shipwrecks and used them to decorate their gardens outside the Mer Palace. The only exception is the Little Mermaid, who thinks that's far too vulgar and just has the pimping marble statue of a boy.
Too.
She thinks what's vulgar?
Vulgar?
Going to the surface?
No, apparently she thinks that collecting spoils from shipwrecks and decorating your garden is too vulgar. She only has one statue of a boy.
Oh, okay.
That's the most vulgar thing of all.
That's just creepy.
Since she's only 10, she must wait 5 agonizing years until it's her turn to reach the surface. But her sisters promise to give a detailed account of what they saw in each visit. One of them freaks out a group of sailors by lying on an iceberg, and another swims far enough inland to terrify a group of children playing in a river. So arguably, the Little Mermaid's just eager to improve diplomatic relations between humans and fish.
Okay, I really wish that we knew the name of the person writing this, because that is hands down an amazing paragraph. I love the mermaids. I love that they're terrorizing little children and sailors. But
me too.
The Little Mermaid's eagerness to repair relations, that's brilliant.
So after half a decade of chomping at the bit, her turn finally arrives. And after being appropriately dressed by her grandmother, she swims up to the surface at last. She sees a ship floating nearby and swims over to investigate.
What do you get appropriately dressed by? Like seaweed in the hair, jewels on the new shell bra?
Obviously, she needed to put on her bling so that she could go and do good, like, diplomatic relations.
Oh my god. Hold on, I need a moment. Just hold on.
I make Cupcake laugh more than anybody else.
No, you have to edit this out. It's terrible. Just the way you said it. You're so hood. Sorry.
For the merfolk in the film, humans are dangerous and mindless barbarians that must be avoided, and their relics are contraband. Whereas in the book, they're surrounded with an aura almost as mysterious as the one we give mermaids. Also, the daughter's curiosity is encouraged, possibly because the others know they'll become bored as soon as they're given permission to do something. That is very much sounds like a teenager life right there. Yeah. The moment that you're allowed to do something is the moment you're like, eh.
Okay. So that's, yeah, I mean, that's a classic Disney animated device there, making mm-hmm. the humans, say like, you know, they're savages. They're just going to fish you and kill you.
Do you think I want to see my youngest daughter strung up on some fish eater's hook?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you do. That would have been a much creepier movie. The Saw of the Little Mermaid.
Daddy! They're not barbarians. I love him.
You know, yeah, I love him. What is this next part about sharking the prince? What the hell?
I thought that said shanking the prince. I'm like, they don't kill him in this. What?
Right on.
This is about seducing the prince, I assume.
Yeah.
Yes.
They should have called it catfishing.
Catfishing the prince.
Catfishing the prince. Well, I think that would have been what Ursula did to Prince Eric in the Disney version. That would yes. be construed as catfishing.
She straight catfished him. She did. Yep.
Wow.
I think that she was probably one of the first to catfish.
Yes. You heard it here first. Ursula was the first to catfish.
Yes. Absolutely. Okay. So this next version is all about the prince, and I know that we could just skip it because everybody like knows how the story goes, but I read it, and you guys, we have to read this paragraph.
Okay.
The ship above is being attacked by fireworks in honor of the prince's birthday, and Ariel swims up to get a closer look. As soon as she sees the prince fondling his dog, she's smitten, but her open purving doesn't last long as a violent storm descends over the sea. The crew evacuate, but a potent mixture of fireworks, booze, and gunpowder see the prince's dog trapped on board in a fire. Fulfilling the fantasy of young girls everywhere, Eric swims back to save him, and although he succeeds, he's left trapped in the ship when it explodes. Ariel finds him unconscious and falling to the depths and pulls him to shore to save him.
That is the most apt description of what a party on a boat would be. Because you know the sailors aren't going to be sober. I mean, they have to avoid scurvy. Fireworks just happen. I mean, gunpowder, booze, bam, fireworks.
A mixture of fireworks, booze, and gunpowder.
Brilliant.
Sounds like an average day for you, Cupcake.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Stop breaking me.
Vision of me stamping at the beach. Katie, to run with fireworks.
Cupcake, read the next paragraph.
Fortunately, Scuttle is on hand to check his vital signs, and although he declares him dead, Eric starts to come around. Rather than flee from this apparent zombie, Ariel starts singing to him until his faithful dog and a distinguished member of the crew hurry over. Ariel disappears into the ocean, leaving Eric gushing groggily about the mystery girl who saved him. Sebastian and Flounder have been watching and swear not to tell King Triton about this, but Ariel's subsequent dreamy behavior catches her family's attention. She is clearly in love with someone.
I love that Eric's a zombie and now. That's it. It's official. Yep. As far as I'm concerned, this is canon.
No.
Yeah. Scuttle pronounces him dead and he comes back to life. Okay, obviously he's a zombie.
All right, that's it.
Hooray!
So he's been, so to this point on, Eric is dead.
Yeah.
And he's pulling a Weekend at Bernie's. Weekend at Eric's.
Right. As with any teenage obsession, Ariel goes overboard, no pun intended, to think of ways she can see her prince again. Despite ad-libbing one of Disney's best and most convincing songs about staying under the ocean, Sebastian is no match for teenage hormones.
Ad-libbing.
And Ariel returns to her cavern to swoon over a marble statue of Eric, but Tiny Flounder somehow salvaged from the shipwreck. I always wondered about that. I always wondered how Flounder got that statue into that cave.
He might have had a turtle help him out.
Flounder's
named
a beast.
Right? What are you
talking about?
He's not a guppy.
He's no guppy.
That Sebastian accidentally let slip to the king that Ariel's in love with the human she saved from drowning, and a mixture of exasperation and fury, Titan destroys Ariel's entire treasure trove and the statue with it. Ariel is left crying in a heap, and everyone learns a lesson about prejudice.
Yeah. Seriously. What's the lesson that we learned?
Yeah. Don't be a hater on humans.
Triton's a little racist.
Yeah.
Speciesist.
Speciesist,
yeah, totally.
And you know what? I thought this was really f***ed up. Okay, now, I was not a child when this movie came out, but... Or wait, it was 80...
It's 89. We were not 80, children.
Oh, I guess I was. Come to think of it. Hey, look at that. I guess I was. I thought it was really, really messed up of Triton to destroy all of her stuff. You know? Grounding her, sure, you know? Like, even getting rid of the statue... You know, because he didn't think that that was a healthy obsession. Like, I could understand that. But I thought it was just so ridiculously messed up of him to destroy everything she had collected. Like, what kind of abusive parent are you?
Well, he was kind of like a short fuse kind of guy. I mean, that's the way he's portrayed throughout the movie, you know. Like...
Can you imagine? Like, Cupcake, can you imagine? Your dad walks into your room and is like, I know you have a crush on the boy down the street, but I really don't like it. I don't want you going out with him. And then he literally destroys everything I have in your bedroom.
Yeah, I would have cried, and then I would have run to the nearest sea witch and had him killed.
Right? I mean, seriously, people are like, oh, I can't believe she made a deal with the witch. But I mean, think about that for a minute. Put yourself in Ariel's situation and think about the fact that all of your toys – your entire collection of stuff that you have obviously spent literally your whole life collecting. He just toasted.
Well, he is the king of the ocean, so he can kind of do whatever he wants.
Well, not if he wants to keep his daughter.
That's true, which he doesn't.
All right, so now we're on the Anderson version. And, I mean, the Disney version itself, you know, the way that she's written it and the way that we talk about it is a little dark. No, you know what? I'm not ready to move on yet. This is supposed to be Creepy Kingdom, and we want to talk about the creepy and the dark stuff. Yeah. I really think that this scene with Triton is one of the darker scenes in the movie.
With how overpowering, domineering he is, and it's cruel.
It's cruel. It's abusive. Like, it is. It's not a very nice scene.
No, it's definitely not. But Disney obviously wanted the viewers to side with the Little Mermaid. So they had to have somebody that was evil that would drive her to do this. So King Triton definitely played the part. But I remember watching that. My sister was totally upset by that part, and I was too.
It's weird because he acts like this, but then, like, when Ariel's not around, it's like he has these scenes where he's trying to, like, he seems sympathetic. And I think that's another great, or not great, that's a big, like, character trait of an abuser.
Yep.
You know, because he's just like, oh, I don't know what to do, Sebastian. She just won't listen to me. I just want her to be okay.
King Triton, you're a jerk.
But it's weird how he comes around, though, at the end, though.
He does. But, like, if we were to put this into our, like, real world kind of, you know, whatever, he is a domineering, controlling, abusive, prejudice parents.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, somebody would have called Child Protective Services along,
right?
You know? Yeah, all of the sisters would have been gone. Guppy, he would have been by himself.
Guppy Protective Services would have been called.
Yeah, sure. Dude. I'm just saying. All right, we can move on. I just felt the need to point out that when you really look at that scene, like, it's a dark scene. All right. So now we move on to the dark, creepy Anderson version. Let's see what he's got going on here. Despite being dive-bombed by fireworks, the Little Mermaid manages to spy on the beautiful young prince while he mills about at his birthday party. When the storm hits and the ship sinks, she has a brief psychotic moment where she's happy because it means he'll be coming to stay with her on the bottom of the ocean. She then remembers he's a human and decides to save him. Not as a lover, but the same way you'd want to save a Ming vase or a Van Gogh. After holding him above the waves all night, she lays him on the beach and splashes away to hide before he wakes up.
She wanted to collect him.
Yeah.
Like taxidermy.
Yeah, that's super creepy. I just want to replace my marble statue
with the real thing, the rotting corpse under the...
Well, I mean, give her some credit. As soon as she realized that he was human and couldn't live down there, she did save him. You know. She's only 10.
All right.
No, this is 5 years later, remember?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so she's 15. Now she's like a crazy teenager with hormones.
Word. Oh. All right. When the prince comes to, he sees the face of a young girl from a nearby temple and mistakenly thinks she saved him. The Little Mermaid falls into a deep depression after this and completely neglects her garden, contenting herself with hugging her marble statue. Eventually, she tells one of her sisters what happened and then tells some of the others and a select few of their friends. One of the friends knows where the prince's castle is, conveniently right on the shoreline.
Yeah, it's really convenient in both versions, by the way.
Right?
Well, he does have a boat. You want to keep it near your castle.
And so the Little Mermaid travels there, sometimes right up to the shallows of the garden, where she can sit and ogle him in peace. The prince has no idea she's there and spends most of his time looking out to the sea and sighing.
Aww.
It's at this point the mermaid starts to fall in love with him. Hey, at least in this version, she, like, spent time with him and stuff to fall in love with him, you know?
Rather than just saving his life.
Yeah. However, her love for the prince isn't the only thing that makes her wish she was part of his world. During a conversation with her grandmother, we just uncover what a mermaid really wants. Or what the mermaid really wants. A human soul.
Now so it's getting good.
Mermaids don't have any souls?
That's kind of messed up.
We discover that although mermaids can live up to 300 years, they don't have an immortal soul like humans and simply dissolve into sea foam upon death. According to the grandmother, the only way they can have one is if they are joined in holy matrimony with a human, as they then can share a soul and earn their own off the back of this. This strengthens the Little Mermaid resolve to somehow win the prince's love and become part of his world. I will happily trade my soul to live 300 years as a mermaid and then turn into sea foam.
I'm down. Maybe possibly getting a soul back and then having a human life again.
I don't even care. I waive my rights to acquire another soul.
Wow.
I'll be right there with you, girl.
Who needs it? I'm not really doing anything with it anyways. I will totally go be a mermaid.
You have sold your soul a long time ago, evil queen.
You don't know that. Well, maybe that's why I'm not concerned about, like, having one.
Yeah, probably.
Probably because you don't already.
In case you thought you'd wandered into another story entirely, both mermaids save the prince from drowning when a birthday celebration goes awry, but one of them is giving a parental bitch slap, whereas the other is almost playfully encouraged to pursue her newfound love interest. Ariel falls in love seemingly in seconds, whereas Anderson's Little Mermaid is a slow burner and has a more complicated motivation for wanting to be with the prince.
So what do you think? You think if, like, the Disney version had this, like, really drawn out, like, period of, like, Ariel stalking Eric, we would have bought their romance a little more?
I think it would make more sense to the adults, but not be as interesting to the children.
Yeah, that's probably the big clash right there.
Yeah. You know, kids want things to just happen. So now we're talking about becoming human. Disney version. As per Disney regulations, every princess must be reduced to a sobbing heap at some point in the story, and it's at this point Ariel is approached by Flotsam and Jetsam. She agrees to follow them to Ursula, despite the protests of Sebastian and Flounder. Ariel approaches the Sea Witch domain with some trepidation, dodging some rather lively cavern worms who were revealed to be former merfolk who fell foul of their powers, her powers. It's not only Sebastian who's been spying on Ariel, as Ursula seems to know everything about her, why she's come, and charitably offers to turn her into a human so she can be with her prince. Of course, such a drastic transformation isn't without its drawbacks. Mm-hmm. Ursula says she'll transform Ariel into a human for 30 days.
You say 30?
Three.
Oh, I thought you held up three fingers, but it sounded like you said 30.
3 days.
Oh, okay, 3 days. My bad.
I was using Ursula's 3.
Oh.
3 days. During which she not only has to make the prince fall in love with her, but also give her the kiss of true love. If she fails to do this, she'll turn back into a mermaid and become property of the Sea Witch, presumably as a cavern worm. If memory serves, in teen terms, 1 day is true love, 2 days merits a tattoo, and 3 is time for a baby, so this isn't the worst part of the deal. The only real downside is the method of payment. Ursula wants Ariel's voice in exchange for her potion. Hormones are the order of the day again, so Ariel agrees to the deal and sees her voice yanked out of her and her tail split into two legs. Both sides neglected the rather important part of her having to breathe air, but fortunately Flounder and Sebastian come to the rescue. Ariel miraculously survives a fatal case of the bends and surfaces using her first breath as a human being.
Let's be clear about that part of the movie, actually. Because I was wondering about that. So mermaids can, you know, breathe air and also be underwater, right?
Yep. Well, no, because mermaids can't actually stay out of the water for too long.
No, they have gills. They breathe through their gills.
But they don't have lungs at all. They don't have both?
No.
Okay, because... But she didn't turn into a human at that point. When she just got legs.
So in the movie, she does become human because she can't breathe. You see, like, she has this look like, oh, cripes.
She really can't breathe.
No oxygen. Yeah.
I always wonder about that, though. Like, I used to think that it was just Ursula being kind of sadistic, and she was like, ha-ha, you know, I got your voice, and you might not live past this part. But then I realized that Ursula does want Ariel to live. She wants Ariel to be part of her collection because she wants to, like, torment Triton with her. So, I don't know. I guess it was just both of them were far too busy singing to, like...
to think about breathing?
Yeah, to think about breathing. But, I mean, really, humans. when you've never had to breathe before, why would you think about it?
Exactly.
That's true.
Those cavern things... the little souls that Ursula already has, those creep me out. Like, that whole part when she's, like, swimming in there, I did not like that. That was super creepy. My sister thought so, too. She would cover her eyes. I think it was, like, one of the more darker parts of the movie after King Triton destroying things. But, yeah, that was – I didn't like that, to think that those were once mer people.
I like the little cavern wormer people.
Of course you do, because you sympathize with the villains more than you sympathize with the good people.
I thought it would be cool to have a little garden made out of them. Like in a fish tank.
With real human souls? Real mer souls?
Okay, they mer weren't souls. Really. Well, they
still have souls. We just figured
okay, that. That's right. Oh, we just found that. Right.
Technically, they weren't mermaid souls. They were actual mermaids who had been transformed into these little worm thingies. But I just thought that it would be cool to have, like, a fish tank with these little wormy creatures on the bottom of it that, like made faces at you and stuff.
We should do this. What? I think we should make this happen. Sushi will have friends.
What were they doing, though? Like, what was the purpose of them? Just prisoners?
They were just there. They were her prisoners. Ursula gave them a contract. They couldn't deliver on the contract. Therefore, their lives were hers.
She collected them.
That was her collection. It really wasn't that sweet. Get it?
Yeah, I get it.
She was just lonely, and she wanted friends, and nobody wanted to hang out with her, so she came up with a way to fill her home with company.
I call shenanigans, like, a whole lot of shenanigans on this one.
That's how I saw it.
Well, well anyways, let's move on to the Anderson version. We got the Disney version. So let's see if we can get creepier than this.
I'm sure it will.
Here we go. The Little Mermaid steals away during a concert at the Mer Palace and heads for the Sea Witch's lair. On the way, she's also accosted by flops?
Polyps?
Polyps? I don't know. They try to drag her down. But these are no former merfolk. They are cursed creatures that have grabbed and suffocated anything that passes by, including another small mermaid whose body she has to swim past.
Ooh, I wonder why corpse. Disney didn't put that in.
Jeez. Already creepier. That's awesome. The sea witch here also seems to know of the mermaid's plan. She says she'll make her a potion that will transform her into a human. Sensibly, she suggests the mermaid drink the potion once she's on land, but warns that splitting her tail into legs won't only be painful the first time, it will be a continuous pain whenever she tries to walk on them. She also slaps a time limit on her, but an altogether different one. The morning after the prince has married someone else, the mermaid will die and become seafoam.
Wow.
Okay. Let's break that down. So this sea witch tells her that she should drink the potion on land because this sea witch apparently cares if she lives.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's painful every time that she walks.
But Ariel will be in constant pain.
That's sad. Certainly makes romancing your love interest really difficult.
Right? Also, her time limit is the morning after the prince marries someone else. She could technically spend years feeling like she's walking on fucking glass. You know, trying to get this guy to fall in love with her.
This is a lot more evil, this version. Much, much more creepy and evil.
Indeed.
Payment is the same. The sea witch wants the mermaid's voice, as it's her best asset, but her method of accepting is rather different. Rather than some airy fairy spell, the sea witch cuts to the chase and simply slices off the mermaid's tongue.
Good gosh, Christian Anderson, what is wrong with you, man? What does this guy's brain look like on the inside? Because that's dark as heck. Goodness.
If this wasn't creepy enough, the sea witch uses sea snakes to bite her chest so she can add blood to the potion, and once she hands it to the little mermaid, even the evil polyps shrink back in horror. The mermaid swims to the surface, lies on the sand in front of the prince's castle, and drinks the potion. The pain is so unbearable she almost blacks out, and when she comes to and takes her first breath as a human, she's completely naked and lying in the shadow of the prince, who is suddenly looming over her.
That's quite a visual.
Yeah. You don't need to go there.
Yeah, we're just going to skip that whole... Yep. In Disney's version, Ariel runs away to pursue the man of her dreams, and as a bonus, she gets to escape and punish her father. She's then easily exploited by the power-hungry Ursula. Anderson's mermaid does not make her decision spur of the moment, and despite the horrible price of the potion, the sea witch gives her a much more realistic deadline, and once she has taken the potion, that's the end of the matter. She gains nothing if the mermaid fails in her endeavor.
So, yeah, there is no motivation for Anderson.
She just wanted the voice. Or she. Maybe this particular sea witch really is just a witch, you know? She just makes potions in exchange for blank.
Yep.
A tongue, apparently.
Ew. Wow. Ew, ew. I would have rather had the voice. I mean, if we're already doing things that are fantastical, take the voice, not the tongue.
So, life above the sea. In the Disney version, Ariel meets Eric. She can't talk. Her and Eric hang out. They get to know each other. She stays in the castle. They become friends. They go on a little boat ride. She finally gets Eric to kind of fall for her. He leans in to kiss her. And of course, Flotsam and Jetsam, you know, mess it all up. And they're singing.
Whoa. Sebastian just can't stop trying to sing to her to get her to do things.
In the Anderson version, after leading the mermaid back to the palace, the prince gets his servants to dress her in fine silks, and he starts calling her his little foundling. He charitably allows her to sleep on a cushion outside his room, but constantly bemoans the fact that she looks like the girl that saved him, who he can never take as a wife because she has given herself to the holy temple. The mermaid remains at his side as a member of his entourage, and together they go riding and mountain climbing. Unfortunately, even though she can outdance his slave girls and has agreed to be the most beautiful in the court, the prince doesn't even consider her wifey material.
It doesn't say wifey
material. No, it doesn't say wifey material. Whatever. Future wifey. One night, the mermaid sisters appear in the water outside the prince's palace. The grandmother and the mer-king follow, but they stay too far away from the shore for the mermaid to see them clearly. The sisters berate the mermaid for the worry she has caused them, but they continue to visit her at night as the weeks pass. As time goes on, the prince becomes more and more fond of the mermaid, and very kindly suggests that since he can't have the real woman of his dreams, she could almost become a substitute, since she's so beautiful and devoted.
Aww. Wow. How benevolent of him.
Right?
He's a total creeper.
For Anderson's prince, the mermaid is just another pretty addition to his posse and an amusing oddity at best. She only grows on him because he's thinking about making do with what he has, whereas Eric seems genuinely endeared by Ariel and sympathetic to her condition. Also, he's not surrounded by a competitive booty and doesn't waste his days regretting not finding the girl who saved him. This, however, lands him in trouble in the next part of the story.
Uh-oh.
Hell hath no fury. Disney version. Ariel and Eric are about to kiss. Bloodsome and Jessam mess it up. Ursula's like, whoa, that was way too close. So Ursula puts her plan into action. Where's Ariel's voice? Comes in as, oh, Vanessa. Casts a spell on Eric and convinces him to marry her the next day. So, Scuttle finds out that Vanessa is actually Ursula. He goes and he tells Ariel. Ariel goes to the boat. Ariel and the other sea creatures mess up the wedding, and Ursula is outed. The last sentence of this is, the sea witch also transforms back into her real self and then grabs Ariel before leaping overboard. Eric seems more concerned about Ariel's welfare than the fact that he nearly got married to an evil, obese octopus woman, so that's kind of encouraging.
I love this writer so much. So much.
The Anderson version. No sooner has the prince confessed some feelings for the mermaid, rumors abound that he is getting married to a beautiful princess from a nearby kingdom. Such rumors are confirmed when it transpires said princess was the girl the prince had been dreaming about this whole time. A wedding ship sets sail with the little mermaid on board, and she is forced to watch festivities and dancing, all the while knowing she'll be dead as a dodo come morning. After the prince and his newfound love have retired to their nuptial tent, the mermaid walks sadly around the ship, waiting for the first sunbeams to hit her. All of a sudden, her sisters appear in the water below, as bald as coots. They say they've traded their hair to the sea witch for a magic knife, which must be used to kill the prince. Once his blood touches the mermaid's feet, they will join in defense, and she'll become a mermaid again, no worse for wear. They beg her to do this before sunrise, but the mermaid can't bring herself to do it, and ungratefully throws the knife away.
Oh, I don't like this girl.
The sun rises, and the mermaid jumps overboard and turns into sea foam.
That's sad. That is very, very, very sad. I would have had some self-preservation and killed that fool prince, because he was a jerk anyways and probably would have been a jerk king.
Maybe he would have had some
kingdom
self-esteem and not gotten with him in the first place to join his little harem.
Yeah, who wants to sleep on a pillow outside someone's door?
Right? What the hell is up with that?
That's the creepy. That whole last part's just creepy. She was obviously not a strong, independent woman.
So to sum it up, the other woman in the Disney version is the sea witch herself, since the prospect of the prince genuinely falling in love with someone does not a happy film make. Although Ariel is captured by the sea witch, she evidently gets an easier time than Anderson's mermaid, who not only has to have the wedding rubbed in her face, but ends up dying due to the power of love and unintentionally roping her sisters into her problems. At worst, Ariel would become a cavern worm, but Anderson's mermaid is quite dead, so this was not the best wedding in either case.
No. Really, it's not. poor thing.
So she's dead, huh? Interesting.
Yeah, she's dead.
Dead as sea foam.
All right. Yeah, that's Anderson's version. I like Anderson's dark versions of all of his stuff. He's kind of messed up, though.
So I want to know, Anderson probably took all of his stories from bits and pieces around the world and then created his own dark, creepy versions?
I don't know.
I'll have to figure it out. I really haven't done that much research. I mean, I know the stories that he's written, and they are really all creepy, but I really don't know the history of him.
Anderson and the Brothers Grimm were the two original, like, fairy tale authors, but where they got their stories from, you know.
Yeah, because, like, wasn't the... No, never mind. Sorry, tangent.
Yeah.
Edit.
Fortunately, this is not the Hans Christian Andersen backstory podcast.
The Hans Christian Andersen hour.
All right. Shall we move on?
Yeah. Yes.
Walking on air.
Walking on air. All right. So the last part of the movie in the Disney version, Ursula grabs Ariel. She jumps off the ship. She takes her down. Eric goes after her. She messes up Eric. Triton comes up and she's like, hey, look, I have your daughter, but I'll trade her for you. And Triton, for some strange reason, is like, okay, yeah, that sounds like a good plan.
It's because he felt bad exploding all of her stuff.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So Ursula turns Triton into a little sea worm thing, gets the crown, gets the trident, causes a whole bunch of havoc. But what she doesn't notice is that Eric has taken over and shipwrecked boat and stabs her in the heart.
Hooray! Boo! Hey. But what? Oh, my bad. Boo! Boo!
So, fortunately, Eric saving him and Ariel makes Triton realize that not all humans are horrible barbarians, and he sees how much they love each other, and he agrees that they can get married, and he turns Ariel back into a human. The end.
The end.
Hooray!
The Anderson version. Here we go.
Oh my goodness.
The Little Mermaid dissolves into sea foam as the first sun rays touch her, but she's somehow still aware of her surroundings.
Ouch.
What? So obviously you're not dead, you're just sea foam.
That's like you know those people that are in comas?
Yeah.
Like they can't communicate, but they know everything that's going on around them.
That's not cool. Nope.
Right? Trapped in your own, like, existence. All of a sudden, strange, totally not angels appear in the sky above her and tell her that they'll make her one of them. They explain they're the daughters of air, and like mermaids, they live for 300 years and don't have an immortal soul. Before the mermaid can groan and give herself an ethereal face palm, the daughters of the air explain that they are in fact able to earn a soul by doing good deeds. Good deeds in this case meaning sending a cool breeze to the tropics or dispersing the scent of fresh flowers.
Oh, I like these people.
Given that the mermaid has both given up her voice, watched her loved one marry someone else without envy, and sacrificed herself for him, the daughters of air must be falling over themselves to let her join their group. And you'd think she'd have already done enough good deeds to earn a soul. But no, sadly not. She has to do good deeds in her new form as the daughter of air to earn it. Once she has, she won't necessarily have to wait 300 years before ascending to heaven. Every time she sees a child that makes its parents happy, God will take 1 year off her probation. But if a child is bad, God will add another year.
What does her seeing good or bad children have to do with her
Maybe
actions?
She just has to blow wind by the kid's hair and the kid smiles and giggles and makes the parents happy and voila.
This part's totally, I don't know, I'm confused. Yeah. Okay, so now we're no longer a mermaid, now we're an angel. And we're on probation before we can go to heaven.
Oh, can I just read this last one? Yes. I love this part. Go ahead. So remember, kids, be naughty, and then the mermaid is 1 year further from heaven. And if you want to be really naughty, add that you don't believe in fairies either. Yes! This is the greatest article ever!
Oh, boy.
Sorry.
All those years.
Holy cow! Dear Hans Christian Andersen, in your grave, I hope that you do not write anymore. These are really bad. That's a terrible story.
So that's the end of the story?
That's the end of the story.
You're like, oh, what a fun little adventure.
Really bad. Now I know why my mom never read these to me.
I mean, overall, well, I guess let's read the conclusion, then we'll wrap up our final thoughts.
Okay. All right. Once upon a time, Hans Christian Andersen wrote a beautiful but tragic story about the unrequited love between a mermaid and a handsome prince. Despite having her tongue cut out, being separated from her family, and feeling like her legs were continuously stuck in a blender to get it, the mermaid was able to have what she really wanted. But when she accepted this and still sacrificed herself for love, even though she could never have it, she was kind of rewarded for her good deeds in the end. Disney cast an eye over the story and thought, bugger that. And conceded the tale about a naive teenage princess who learns nothing, gets everything she wants through sheer stubbornness, and lives happily ever after, while her stern father has to learn to let her go and be less judgmental of people that make a living out of catching and devouring household pets. Household pets, which can also sing, dance, and apparently influence human behavior. Basically, the original story is unrecognizable, save for the characters and the fact that the mermaid rescues a prince and trades her voice to a sea witch for human legs. The Disney version opts for a tale about growing up and prejudice, whereas the original version is about self-sacrifice and its eternal rewards, in a completely non-terrorist context, of course.
Whoa.
And how you probably shouldn't throw your life, family, and friends away just for the one person you ever had a crush on. So, not only has Disney sanitized the story beyond recognition, but they've also used it to teach the exact opposite of what it was intended.
That is absolutely and completely true.
The sea witch approves.
Wow.
That really is true.
I mean, the fact, I never really thought about this before, but in the Disney version, Ariel learns nothing. She's all, every mess that she's got herself into, someone else got her out of it.
Yeah. Yep. Sounds about right.
Again, another reason probably why young girls gravitated to Ariel. Because she was like, oh, man, that's sweet. I could just keep doing whatever I want.
See, I think now we as adults can say that because we can see that in the story.
Yeah.
But at the time when you were a little kid, that's not what you were focusing on. You know, you're focusing on a story and she has to go out and have an adventure for love and blah. I don't think that people really saw, oh, hey, I can be a jerk bag and do whatever I want. I'll still get my way. At least I'm pretty sure most kids
I don't think that they reached that conclusion. I think it's subconscious. That's what I'm saying. I don't think kids sat there and you're like, oh, now I can do whatever I want because Ariel got to. You know, I think it's subconscious. I don't know. I mean, you know, there's.
Roxy, do you have something to say about this?
Ariel hella rebelled and she got exactly what she wanted and more. Okay, that was the lesson right there. Don't do what your parents tell you. Don't follow the status quo. Don't be like everyone else and good things will happen. I've lived my life on these terms.
Wow.
Shoot. That's kind of true.
And along the way,
you know, along the way, she killed a sea witch.
Like
she
many near-death experiences.
I have had many near-death experiences.
Yeah, she's
that
had quite
part's
a few.
True. But I still have my tongue, my voice, and it doesn't feel like my legs are in a blender. So I think I'm like a step ahead of the game here.
It's weird. I don't know which one I like better. I mean, I definitely like a lot of the elements of the Anderson version that we were unaware of.
Mm-hmm.
From a creepy standpoint, or from a story standpoint. You know, that's a lesson we're supposed to learn. Like, you know, I don't
like the lesson in the Anderson one. I think it's terrible.
Well, of course you do. You don't have any morals.
True, but
I love the dramatic pause.
We're all waiting for this response.
I was trying to think of like a witty retort, and I couldn't think of one. That's true. I don't, but. I don't like it. She sacrifices everything for this dude. And like, even when he's a total jerk, she can't kill him and like, get, no, 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 no.
How do you really feel, Roxy Chai?
I'm not digging the Little Mermaid.
Well, just doing this podcast, I actually want to go back and read the original story.
Okay.
I think that would be awesome.
Speaking of which, I thought that too, and so I'd like to point out something creepy that I have found. I decided to look up the original one and see if I could buy it, right? I found it on Amazon. It's a book, Anderson's Fairy Tales by Hans Christian Andersen. It's a paperback book. It's got a very childlike drawing on the cover, and it's under children's books / fiction / classics. The description is, Hans Christian Andersen is the best loved of all tellers of fairy tales. I'm going to say that again. The best loved of all tellers of fairy tales. And this book is in the children's section.
Wow. So people have been thinking these were children's stories from the get-go, I take it. Were these originally written as children's stories? They really were written as children's stories.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
Well, I mean, I think all of the old fairy tales are all, I mean, that's the fun part about, you know, this particular topic is they all were very dark. And mm-hmm. I think life was a lot darker back when these were
true. Yeah.
You know, kids had to grow up a lot faster than they do these days because they didn't live very long.
Yeah, you died at like 30.
So you were out of school, married by 12 or 13.
So it's hard to like try to shelter children in the dark ages because So I'm sure that's kind of where this comes from. But that still doesn't really give him a free pass on how creepy a lot of these things were.
Yeah, no, I would, I mean, if it was me, I'm just saying, I would market this with like a warning. Well, you know what I mean?
Nowadays, yeah. Like,
yeah. I'm looking at it on Amazon, and it's just marketed as a little kid's book.
Yeah, especially when you look at what's in that and you see like titles that most of us are familiar from being from Disney.
And so that's what you're going to think that you're getting is those Disney titles. That's creepy. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. That's just creepy.
How dare you? No, you finished my sentence. It's fine.
Oh, make a like, James.
We finished each other's sandwiches.
Sandwiches. Oh!
Jinx.
Jinx again.
Yes.
Oh, well, while we all just sit here and enjoy ourselves, we should probably wrap this up. So.
Probably.
Well, that was fun, you guys. Bye.
Ursula's going to go claim some voices now, so I should probably go hide mine.
Yeah, it was, you do have a flawless voice.
Her voice is better than mine.
Can we get actually, that's how we should end this, with a musical performance from Cupcake Terror.
Which song?
Well.
I'm trying to think. There you go.
Do, 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 do.
Oh, sorry. that's another story for another podcast.
That's the Ursula part.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I don't remember her music.
The music.
Oh, yeah. Do, 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 do. Yeah.
See? I know what I'm talking about.
All right. I think that's what everyone tunes in for.
You know what? I think now whenever we do podcasts about movies, I'm just going to sing songs from the movie. I'm sure everyone would love that.
Oh, well, we're trying to get people to tune back in, Cupcake.
Okay, all right. Never mind, just kidding.
Damn.
They'll tune in if she sings. I will.
No, it's not, you sound lovely. You have a great voice, Cupcake.
Oh, you're adorable. I love you too.
Quite angelic.
Oh. Well, from down under, maybe, but
it's like unlike other things. But that we're not going to get into that. We're not going to play on blast.
Where can we find you, Roxy Dart? What? Huh?
What are you talking about? She's trying to end the show.
I got hella distracted, and James said your voice was angelic, and I was thinking, yeah, like the daughters of the air. Like, my bad. I went on a little Hans Christian Andersen tangent there.
Yeah, you went on a little fantasy daydream. I would have loved to have seen this played out in your head. But you.
I was watching her. It was like completely blank. I don't know. Nothing? All right.
I had a whole little movie going on up here. Okay. Well, if you would like to find me, you can do so at welcometoroxysworld.com. It has all of my social network information on there, plus the other podcast that I do, plus the YouTube show that Cupcake and I do together. So check it out if you like me.
And you can find me on Instagram as Cupcake Terror and where Roxy just mentioned. That's all I got. I'm not awesome on social media, guys.
That's all right. We forgive you. If you want to contact us here at Creepy Kingdom, you could do so by sending us an email to creepykingdom@gmail.com. And if you would like to check out any of our other podcasts, such as Roxy's World, Curvy Cutie Chat, and the Even James the Podcast podcast, all you got to do is go to monstermoviemedia.com.
And for show notes, videos, creepy Disney cosplay, and fan art pics, links to all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google+, Tumblr, and Pinterest, just go to creepykingdom.com. And if you would like to interact with us and other Creepy Kingdom listeners on a very intimate level, then join our Facebook group, The Citizens of the Creepy Kingdom. You can find the link to that group by going to the Creepy Kingdom Facebook page. And it's the pinned post at the top. And if you would like to help support Creepy Kingdom, you could do so by being a patron at Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/creepykingdom. Well, until next time.
I have a girl now. It is Mimiite. Pleasant dreams. Ha 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 ha